Welcome to First Reading, the Old Testament lectionary podcast for all who love the Bible. I'm Reverend Dr. Rachel Wren, Assistant Professor of Biblical Studies at Trinity Lutheran Seminary at Capital University.
And I am Rosie Canethel, Assistant Professor at Biblical Studies at Wake Forest University in the Religion Department.
And I guess that makes me Reverend Dr. Tim McNinch, teaching Hebrew Bible at Christian Theological Seminary. And the three of us are here together, missing our dear friend Paul, who's under the weather today.
Oh, poor Paul.
But we're going to have a party, even without Paul.
Yeah.
We'll do our best, at least.
That's right.
And what better time to have a party than Lent, right?
Nothing says party like Lent 5, yeah, I tell you.
For sure. So, yes, that's right. We are in the fifth week of Lent. And the first reading happens to be Isaiah 43, verses 16 to 21. And for those of you keeping score, there are other texts in the lectionary as well. Psalm 126,
Philippians. Your bingo cards.
Yeah. Philippians 3, 4b to 14, and John 12, 1 to 8. Bingo.
Okay. Can I just dive right in here? Because I'm going to offer something to preachers, which they're not going to be happy about. And so I should just get it out of the way first. And my suggestion is a time thing. We're in Isaiah 43 here. So which Isaiah is that again? Yes. Second Isaiah. And so we're looking at, the time when Cyrus is on the horizons. And there's not we're not deep into Second Isaiah at this point. If you go back to Isaiah 40, that's the beginning of Second Isaiah. This chapter has a lot going on, and our pericope has a lot going on. And if you just kind of dive right in, you're sort of diving into the deep end. If you start at Isaiah 40 and just skim read, you don't have to go carefully, you don't have to take notes, you don't have to do anything, but just get a sense of the flavor of the feel of the emotion, even if you're familiar with it. Even if you're like, yeah, I know Isaiah 2, I know this section. Just do a quick read through to get you up to this point. Because one of the things you see is that 2nd Isaiah is kind of cyclical. God covers a lot of the same topics over and over and over again. And so what God's talking about in this chapter in particular, it has already been talked about up to this point. So it can be helpful to just sort of get a sense of the conversation into which you're diving. That's my my little thing that preachers not be happy with me about. I don't know. What do y'all think? Is that a bad idea at the end of Lent? Should we just ignore that?
You mean more homework? Read more?
I know. Right?
I think that's a fair warning.
Anybody who's taken a class with me would not be surprised that I'm you know what you should do? Read more. That's not a shock to people. If that is not something that really draws you at this moment, maybe shorten the homework episode and just read those first 16 verses of this chapter.
Yeah.
In part because it's gorgeous. I mean, it's close to one of my favorite texts definitely one of my favorite texts in Isaiah. Really, all of these chapters are, though. But I mean, again, I'm in 41 verse 1. But now this is what the Lord says. He who created you, Jacob, he who formed you, Israel, do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have summoned you by name. You are mine. I mean, and you can just keep, it's just beautiful. It's hope-filled and it's just gorgeous. And I think, especially at the end of Lent. So this is the payoff to doing this little bit of extra homework, adding in those first 16 verses.
Uh-huh.
With Lent, and I promise there's a payoff. I'm not just assigning it. But, so if you start at Ash Wednesday kind of smacks us in the face with mortality. And it's beautiful. It's one of my favorite services, of all of the services in the church year. But then we move straight from that to Lent, where we focus on fasting and penitence and prayer, which, again, is all good, but can be difficult. It can be, a slog is too strong of a word, but it's a lot going on, even as the weather's getting more beautiful. But now, here in the fifth Sunday of Lent, we are close. We can smell the chocolate bunnies. We can hear the strains of the Easter hymns. We're not there yet, but we're starting to taste the promise.
Yeah.
See how I brought it around?
Yeah, yeah.
So it is with the Israelites at this point in Isaiah. They have spent 40 years in fasting, penitence, and prayer, which is good, but can be difficult. But now, here in Isaiah 43, they can smell the desert wind beckoning them home. They can hear rumors of a foreign king whom God has raised up to redeem Israel. They're not there yet, but they too can taste the promise. So that's my little, yeah, what do you think?
I think you're onto something, Rachel. And I too love the opening verses of chapter 43. In fact, I had them read at my ordination service just a few months ago.
You?
Yeah, because they were so powerful. But yeah. as the passage continues into the lectionary reading, it's that anticipation that is just bubbling to the surface in the in the verses that we're focusing in on for this week, right?
Yeah, no, anticipation, absolutely. And I do want to say just one sort of preaching pitfall before we get there. Gorgeous language. When you pass through the waters, I'll be with you. Through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. Walk through the fire, you shall not be burned. If you're going to add this on to your whole sermon and read it publicly in worship, you may just want to skip verse 3b. I give Egypt as your ransom, Cush and Sheba in exchange for you. That's a historical verse that would need to be unpacked, which maybe we wouldn't have time to do in a sermon. Egypt, Cush, and Sheba are all kingdoms. They're all empires. They're like the huge, big, glorious sort of United States of the time period. Mm-hmm. They're not Egypt as it functions now, which is, of course, on a different reality. So I wouldn't want you to read that casually and just be like, yeah, God will give away those African countries. Like, whoa, whoa, whoa. It's not what we're talking about here.
Right.
Just like an important distinction to make there. And then verse 4, because you are precious in my sight and honored, and I love you. Okay. I've hit that hard enough. Okay. Now going to verse 10, I promise my thoughts do end up at our pericope. But going at verse 10, there's a summary of what God has been saying in the past three chapters. I am the Lord. There's no deity besides me. They're all just idols. Or if you're going to put this in secular terms, I am the Lord, hear me roar, or something like that. When we get to verses 16 to 17, it's sort of like that's where we get into the shift of this chapter. Everything up to this point has sort of been repetition of what's been going on in 2 Isaiah.
Mm-hmm.
But then verses 16 to 17, something really interesting happens. Verse 16, there's a rehearsal of God's action in Moses' time, not like a play rehearsal, but like rehearsing it, going over it, saying it again.
Exodus 14 and 15, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like you know something about that passage or something, Jim. And that was like the action, right? Like the Exodus moment, specifically the going through the sea part, that was the lifting up of the mighty hand and the outstretched stretch of the arm, or whatever the phrase is. It was the evidence of God's ability and desire and prowess to rescue God's people, to come to their help in time of need. It would make sense that that's mentioned here, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then what immediately does it say in verse 6-17? Don't remember it. Do not remember. Do not remember the former things or consider the things of old. So why would you remind us of one of the old things if what you want us to do is move past it? Like there's not a whole lot of sense here at first blush. Part of it, I think, is that God is saying that this new liberative moment, which is going to happen in these exiled Judahites' lives, this new liberative moment is going to eclipse even that mighty act of old. Now, don't go supersessionist on me. We are still in the Hebrew Bible. This is not saying Sinai doesn't count anymore. This is still Israelites and their descendants. But more importantly, this new liberative moment, in this moment, the people themselves are going to be altered by God's new action. So roll with me here real quick. What is the Hebrew word for to remember? That's the irony, right? I can't remember, but what is it?
When my students can't remember something, I make them say, "Oy, shachakti, I've forgotten."
Oy, shachak, what's to remember?
Zachar.
Okay, I thought it was zachar. So anyway, that word, though, zachar, doesn't just mean to bring to mind. It means to bring to mind and to act accordingly, to allow the memory of the past thing to shape and guide your current behavior. At this point, we've been exiled. So the remembering of the Exodus story wasn't enough to change the people's behavior, to create a people who could trust and worship in God alone. So God says, okay, I'm going to do a new thing. And when I do this new thing, when you remember it, when you call it to mind, your behavior will be different than it was in the past. That's my assertion. What do y'all think?
One thing that I'm thinking about is, so Paul and I worked on the first four of these episodes, and all of them were focusing on covenant in some way. Mm-hmm. So I find it interesting on what you're highlighting here is that all of these rehearsals of covenant in week one, week two, week three, and week four of Lent now are being swept away in some sense to make room. Like you remembered for these last 4 weeks, the various covenants that, you know, the Hebrew Bible gives us, David, Abraham, Moses, all of these. Mm-hmm. And now there's a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
And not again with the idea, it's not supersessionist. You needed this to prepare.
Yeah.
In some way to perceive what is new about this. You need to know something about what came before, right? So that's a really, I think, an important but subtle thing to maybe like flesh out here is that there's a remembering, and then there's the kind of remembering that will hold you back because it's humanity.
Yes.
And then the kind of remembering that's like, whoa, wait, this is totally different. This is new.
I think that's key. Like verse 18, do not dwell on the past. You know, another way we might paraphrase that is do not live in the past. So God says, listen, I did these great things to give you a future in order that you might live and thrive. If you are living only in them, you will not have a future. You will not like live and thrive. So I think the doing away with the old things, I don't know that that's necessarily, I mean, I can see how you get there from the text, but it's almost like God wants them to reframe their relationship to these past things.
I think so, too. And in fact, I found myself coming to that same conclusion, but kind of through a different path.
Yeah.
So I spent just a little bit of time here in the Hebrew and was thinking about some of the interesting grammatical things happening here. So in that verse that we're kind of focusing on here, verse 18, don't remember the former things. And then verse 19, so I'm about to do a new thing is the NRSV translation. And several other translations I checked say the same thing. And that is a perfectly valid way to read the Hebrew that's there. It's hineni oseh chadasha. But every translation that I checked, and I checked three or four, none of them render hineni.
Yeah.
It's a hine. Here I am. Like, it's...
Wow.
It's not so much that you should be patient because soon in the future something's going to happen. It's, ta-da, here it is. It's happening.
I am the Lord. Hear me roar.
Exactly. Yes. And again, so it's hineni oseh. So that's the participle, doing.
Mm.
Here I am doing a new thing.
Wow.
Now that I'm emphasizing that a little bit. Participle can also mean like anticipatory, like just about to or just starting to. But it can also be rendered as something that is ongoing or continually happening or happening now. And I almost would tend to shade it in that direction because the fourth word is ata, now.
Yeah.
It's springing up.
Yeah.
Tzmach. Can you perceive it now? And so there's a nowness to what God is doing. Not a let's wait for it to happen in the future, but it's happening right now. And that hine is one of my favorite Hebrew words.
I know.
Hine, like pay attention, wake up, see it. Turn your attention, your focus to it right now, because if you were just to lift up your eyes and look, you'd see it. It's there. Yeah. And so that kind of got me a little jazzed about what's happening here. I am doing a new thing right now. It's springing up.
Mm-hmm.
That sent me kind of tumbling backwards into the passage here where verse 16, where the lectionary starts, says the Lord who makes a way, hanoten, another participle.
I was going to say the maker of the way,
Right. So that's another way that participles can be rendered, right, is by making them sort of like a title or a I don't know what the grammatical way that we talk about that is, sort of residual, residential, like this is part of my character.
Yeah.
I'm a giver. I'm a maker of a path in the sea.
It's almost like the world turned upside down if you think of Hamilton, because the Lord says, listen, what I did that one time was make a path through the sea, but now what I'm going to do is make a path of water in the wilderness. It's like a
like the inverse?
What do you call it, a negative? Yeah, or like a negative image.
Yeah,
where,
yeah.
So it's, again, there's an upside downness to what's going on. And maybe that's what's going on with verse 20 too, with the wild animals, the jackals and the owls. Maybe it's because it's sort of like, well, of course, wild animals can't honor God and the jackals and the owls don't do anything. But God is like, well, in this new thing I'm doing, even they are going to be able to honor me.
So a word about jackals.
Yeah,
I hadn't really thought about that until right now, but I've been watching this special, maybe Netflix. This is about big cats. Jackals are dogs, but this is about big cats. And it's kind of a documentary. They're following like a bunch of animals in some African wilderness. And part of the tension of the documentary is that the dry season has gone on very long, but the animals know, and they're starting to congregate around this little trickle of a stream that's still left because they know. And sure enough, all of a sudden that stream starts to swell and turns into this flooded zone where, you know, all the animals are just, you know, having fun and the elephants are doing their thing and all of that. Right. Because way off somewhere where they couldn't see, there were rains and there were, you know, snow on mountains way far away that had melted. But the rivers in the desert came and the animals knew it and they were rejoicing, right?
And I wonder if that's
part of the picture here, because that happens in Southwest Asia as well, you know, in the wadis seasonally flood and fill with water. And there's not only just a new thing, but a renewal, like a seasonal renewal. The things that happened in the past but aren't happening now, they come around again. And so when God says, I'm the one who makes, like, habitually a way in the water and paths, and that I give water in the wilderness, I give rivers in the desert, like that participial action of bringing newness around and around and around. I wonder if that says something about this don't remember the past in the way that you have been, which is to despair. Like, God helped us in the past, but we screwed it up and now we're stuck there.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
But God says, I am doing chadasha, which could be a new thing, but I wonder if it's like newness, like in the way that I am a maker of paths to the sea, I am a doer of renewal. Like, that's who I am. You can see it in the rivers in the wilderness. They come season after season, year after year. In that same way, what I did before for your people, I'm doing again right now, if you'll just recognize it.
I love that. A doer of renewal, which is an easy jump from there to a doer of resurrection, right? Because a resurrection is a return to life, a renewal of life where life was dead. And, you know, preachers, like, if you're getting tired or burnt out in Lent 5, like, this is a great way to tip into the, you know, the last thing before the Easter season, because now it springs up. Do you not perceive it?
You don't even have to use the word participle in your sermon, but you can still talk about this stuff.
In fact, please don't. The only people who will be happy if you do are the three of us here, and we won't be there.
I was actually thinking, as you were talking about that, we're on spring break over here at Wake Forest. And so my daughter and I, last night, we watched Moana 2.
Spoilers.
So, but if you're looking for an illustration, right, one of the major things that Moana is a way maker, right? And so she's a way finder.
Yeah.
She's somebody who creates a way for her people. Yeah. Like, I mean, I was just like, oh, that's kind of interesting that we just watched this last night and watched her making a way for her people, right? Yeah. So that's the second movie is about that, finding paths in the sea, leading So I don't know. That was an interesting kind of image to have as I was listening to both of you expound on this.
I love that.
I like kind of refocusing this on who God is, part of what God's character is like. Because it's one thing, I don't know about you all, but I'm feeling somewhat overwhelmed by the chaos of our world right now and everything that's happening. And it's one thing to like call out to God to like step in and do something, like give us a one-off like little help with something. But if part of what this passage is saying is pay attention to the kind of God that we worship, who is a God whose very nature is one of renewal.
Yes.
And that the things that you may look wistfully or even regretfully upon, you know, in the past, God can bring around that newness again, not as like a one-off favor or something like that, but because that's who God is, that's what God does. And that reflecting on that gives me a sense of hope that I'm not asking God to do something out of character. Please help us, but to do something in character by calling on God to step in.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think maybe then our call is to look for the wild animals, the jackals, the owls who are congregating around the stream, which looks completely empty to us right now, but they sense the thing budding up. And so, you know, who are the people in our lives, or who are the animals, or the, you know, whatever it might be, who give us that hope that the water is coming, the water is coming, the water is coming. Mm-hmm.
I think one nice thing about this liturgically too, at the end of Lent, is that it's then moving us toward Easter, right? That renewal, that new life that is promised at the end of this season, right? That the various penances, disciplines that you may have taken up during these 4 or 5 weeks, that there is new life that's come somewhere in there, even though, you know, for many of us, we may have given up, started back up, you know, however our journey might have been, that all of us have the hope of some new life, no matter where we are in the journey. And that might be a hopeful thing for congregations to also be reminded of in this first reading, that continues, right? That theme continues throughout these readings this week.
I think that's a great point, Rosie. And I think that's a great point to, you know, whatever direction your sermon takes, is that like in Isaiah 43, this hasn't happened yet. Like the streams are not yet budding up. The chariots and horses are not yet squashed under the waves. Like they are still waiting, but they are getting whispers of it. They are getting, again, they're waiting in the promise, and they're just starting to sense that promise may be realized. So if your people are waiting, if they're not there yet, like that's okay. And this could be a really great text for them.
So I think one of the pitfalls, this "I am about to do a new thing" is something that gets quoted out of context quite a lot and becomes this, you know, just to me, a bit of an empty way of looking at newness, right? Our culture is obsessed with newness, you know, the newest thing around the corner, right? I mean, I think there is something there in the way that we maybe have reframed this, in that it's not just looking for the next new thing, the new fresh face, the new whatever to shift our attention. But there is a discipline in the remembering that these, you know, weeks of Lent have led us toward, and there's a different way that we're maybe looking at the newness that is springing forth here, being informed by what has come before, right? And that orients us toward the new in a different way, in a deeper way, I think, in a way that really welcomes it as new life, and not just something to entertain or something to distract or something just, you know, just new to be new.
Right.
Well said. Very well said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's inspiring to me. Is that enough of a party? Should we stop now before it really gets out of hand?
Our prayers are with you, preachers. We know you're at the end of Lent and you've got a big week ahead. And just know that, we're praying for you and hang in there. The water is coming. Watch the wild animal. Right.
That's right. Well, friends, thanks for hanging in there with us and dipping into the podcast for this week. We hope that it's given you something to chew on and to maybe use as you think about what you might preach on in this fifth week of Lent. You can find all of our other episodes over on the website, firstreadingpodcast.com. And if you haven't checked us out yet on YouTube and happen not to be watching us there right now, you're going to want to head over to YouTube to check out this video. And yes, if for nothing else, to see the character in the background of Rosie's screen. So
the very special guest. There she is.
So take a look for us on YouTube. In fact, for a while now, we've been putting each week's episode on YouTube. If you're an audio listener, you can always find us on all the regular places where you get podcasts. And we look forward to being with you when we come around again next week. Until then, I'm Tim McNinch.
I'm Rachel Wren.
And I'm Rosie Candipole. Happy preaching.
Yay!
Happy preaching.
Happy preaching. You're a preacher. Hear you roar.
This kid is now, the belt is a strap or some sort. What is happening here?
Don't hold me back, Mom.